to Books and Beyond with your hosts, Karen and Louisa. Join us for half an hour of information, entertainment, reading recommendations, and beyond. Brought to you by Auckland Libraries.
I know this girl, and she works in a library, yeah.
Kia ora katoa. If you're a regular follower of Books and Beyond, you will know Karen and I have been presenting these weekly episodes about, well, books.
for over a year.
So we hope you've enjoyed these sometimes serious and not so serious chats. So today I want to welcome Alison to our lineup of three.
Oh, thank you. It's lovely to be here.
Kia ora, Alison. And kia ora, Karen.
Kia ora.
This is a little bit complicated, isn't it?
Alison and Louisa.
Getting used to it. So for our first show of three, we thought we would do a good old What Are We Reading Now show. So, do I start? How do we do this?
Throw yourself in.
Throw myself in.
Dive in.
So, as regular followers know, I am a hail from the Pacific, or my dad does, from the Cook Islands. So I'm always on the hunt for something to read from the Pacific. And I found in the basement, actually, in Central Library, Writing the Pacific, an anthology of stories and poems. There were a few familiar faces. Siri Barford was in there, so I thought, oh, that's what I'll read at the moment. And it's great for, you know, busy lives when you, at the end of the day, just want something, a short story or
something,
essay.
Something to dip into.
Yes, but not so, not to keep you awake all night. So in amongst it, I was surprised or happy to discover a writer, Kathy Coa Dunsford, who some people may know. Kathy is the author of 20 books in print and translation. So she translates her books into Turkish, German. New Zealand's listed there, so I'm not sure what language there might be.
Kiwi.
Kiwi, English, maybe a te reo Māori. And anyway, she's written this Muriroa Waiata, songs for Muriroa. And it really resonated with me. I really enjoyed reading it. So if you don't mind, I'd just like to read the opening. In 1962, without consultation, France declared Muriroa Atoll and other Tahitian islands as nuclear test sites. Muriroa Waiata depicts real events, dreams, and underwater sequences from the perspective of the whales, dolphins, and turtles affected by the testing, interwoven with traditional Maori mythology and proverbs. It's really cool. So the opening sequence paragraph is, she strolls over to the dunes and the haunting moonlight toward a cave at the mouth of the harbour. From within, voices, Waiata, then silence. She enters the cave, drawn by a power from within. At the far end, a pinpoint of light. She walks toward it. Nearing, she sees a rounded piece of bone, light shining from its centre. It appears suspended in mid-air. She moves closer. The bone hovers at eye level. She reaches out her hand. The bone is placed in her palm. It is in the shape of a fish hook. Light shines through the ribs of the old guia. A piece of one rib is missing. Isn't that lovely?
That really is. That is beautiful. Like, yes.
So that's called, what is it, Waiata from Muriroa?
Yes,
yeah. Oh,
it's
gorgeous.
Just one of the lovely stories in this book. Though I'm a little disappointed that there's so many Australian authors in the book as well. I was like, writers from the Pacific. But anyway.
Pacific is Pacific.
Yeah. They're writing about the Pacific, so good on them. Yeah. Anyone else? Who's next?
Yeah, well, I'll move a little bit further afield. I've just finished, just last night, a book from India and by Shobha Rao, published in 2018, and it's called Girls Burn Brighter. So Shobha Rao is a real rising star, and this is her debut novel.
I remember it was on the Auckland Library's Top 100 for the New Voices category last year. Yeah,
yeah. Oh, I think she's going to be a really important new voice. So this Girls Burn Brighter. It's a modern day story set in a village quite a long way inland from Hyderabad, and it follows the lives of two young women who are from two different families in a village, but they belong to the caste of weavers. And I must admit, I didn't even realise that weavers belonged to
their, had their own caste.
Very, very sad. Now, the book, it's a real assault on the senses. You get that real feeling of the heat, the dust, the smells, the tastes. They're not always pleasant either, but and you get these really beautiful descriptions of weaving. Who knew that weaving a sari could be such a sensual experience? But it you really get a good look at the appalling treatment of young women in India, and I suppose when you're living in a patriarchy, it's tough, really tough for them. A huge sense of landscape, which is the thing I always come back to. I think that's my thing, actually. So the descriptions of the village, the river, the mountain, temple, the markets, and the people's dreams that they have there of getting to the coast. And that's something that in New Zealand we don't really, or most of us, don't dream of one day seeing the coast because we're so close to it. And then once you've seen the coast, you want to get to a big city and then maybe the USA. And ultimately, it's about friendship, and it asks the question, I think, how far would you go for a friend? How, you know, what would you do to help a friend in need? It's very hopeful at the end, and what I just was amazed was at the resilience of the characters, these young women. But at the end of it, so last night I finished it, and it's quite an emotional experience. In fact, I feel as I need to lie down and a cup of tea after I have to recover from it. So it's a hugely big and important book. Mm. So I've really, really loved it. Mm.
So we should probably say that the title, Girls Burn Brighter, what does that refer to? Because that's partly people will understand why it was such a shocking or, you know,
it had,
intense read.
Yes, elements of the shock and reality, really. The disfigurement of young women that takes place.
Yeah, so disfigurement or sometimes burning.
Sometimes
the
burning.
Famous, oh, her stove exploded.
Yes.
So that's about the dowry, isn't it?
Yes.
So the first wife gets killed, and then another marriage can be arranged with a new dowry, isn't that?
Yes, that's right. And then forced amputations to make people perhaps earn more money begging on the street. And, you know, it really is. It's grim. Terrible.
And yet hopeful.
I was glad you mentioned that it ends hopefully because, it does leave you with a nice, comfortable corner of the world,
yes.
Feeling very uncomfortable but feeling lucky as well, I think.
Absolutely.
I've actually travelled to Hyderabad, into that countryside.
Oh.
So thank you for that insight, because as a tourist from a bus window, you see but you don't feel. Mm. And that there was a lot of feeling. So thank you, Alison.
Thank you. And so I've picked a Nigerian author. Interesting. Moving yet further afield. So this, my author, the one that I have been recently reading, I haven't been recently reading. I've always been reading, and I recently ordered his new book. I requested for the library to purchase his newest book. So I will be reading it soon, is Teju Cole. So interesting about Nigeria is it's a place that's always been associated, for me, it's always been associated with pain, with deep pain. When I was a child, when I was growing up, there were the photos of the Biafran War, the starving infants, the ones that sadly we're now seeing in Yemen. Then it was the Biafran War. Then when I grew up, there was the terrible case of Ken Sarawiwa, who, I don't know if you know, was the Nigerian writer and activist who was actually executed by the military regime. He was arrested on a trumped-up charge of murder, which everyone knew was trumped up, and hanged. He was a dissenter who spoke up about the environmental damage in the Niger Delta, which is actually where his home was, his homeland. This is the, you know, the dumping of petroleum waste. And then when I left Europe to move to New Zealand, that was when we'd be coming back from the beach and we'd see the poor Nigerian girls lining the roads, heading away from the beach, waiting for the truckers or your general middle class creeps to pick them up. And then I came to New Zealand and met Teju Cole, a Nigerian American writer. So he was born in the US, his parents were Nigerian, his father was studying in America, and he was raised in Lagos. So I first met him on Instagram, where he has these photos. He's a photographer, art historian, and a writer. And his photos are just incredible. And then the captions would be these incredibly eloquent thoughts illuminating a point, which was very often political or about immorality, also political. And very moral. He's a very moral person. He's actually a woke person in a way that gives you hope for the word woke, because most woke people are obnoxious because it's important to be woke. But he's actually seems to be born woke. It seems very instinctive and not done for effect. He's very grave and very brilliant. So then I met him at the Auckland Writers Festival. This was a high that I lived on for months. I saw him at the opening night party and I bore down on him, and he spent 10 minutes talking to me about looking and taking photos and writing, both areas I'm passionate about. So that was when I read his autobiographical novel for the festival about going back to Nigeria. And this is the one that I can recommend. Well, I can recommend all his books, but this is the one, Every Day is for the Thief, it's called. So that was the one I was going to put forth, which is that he goes back to Nigeria after his studies, and he finds this whole new Nigeria. So very vital economy. It's even got a fast food chain for the middle class. He says, you know, when I got my sudden desire to have some peppered snails, I could pop down to the Tantalizers food chain, and it's full of internet cafes. So there hadn't been a single one when he'd left, and he goes in to write a letter, and he finds that he's sitting in the middle of these young men they call the Yahoo boys, who are the ones doing internet scams. And he's got this great story which sort of sums up his a look at Nigeria from a different way, which is what's so wonderful about reading books from insiders about other countries. He says, I see a letter being written from the chairman of the National Office for Petroleum Resources. The writer is a rough-looking man who is clearly chairman of nothing. There are other letters from the heirs of fictional magnates, from the widows of oil barons. I, Karen, received one of these, the widow of an oil baron who said she was writhing to me instead of writing to me, which I thought was lovely.
It's always a giveaway.
Illegal representatives of incarcerated generals. And they are such enterprising samples of narrative fiction that I realize Lagos is a city of Scheherazades. The stories unfold in ever more fanciful iterations. And as in the myth, those who tell the best stories are richly rewarded. And so I bought, at the festival, I bought his book of essays, which is another book I can highly recommend, which is Known and Strange Things. And when I went in to get it signed, he smiled, I have to share this, and he said hello, and he signed the book, and he handed it to me, and I went away, and I opened the book, and it said, to Karen, keep looking, keep writing. Was so wonderful. This man,
lovely.
Everyone has to love this man.
Yes, he's lovely, isn't it?
Yeah.
I have heard that he's the thinking woman's crumpet. And I wondered if you might agree with that.
I would definitely agree with that. And I say it's a crumpet with butter and jam.
Oh, yeah.
Multifaceted crumpet.
She's still glowing from that.
I am.
So, right.
Over to you, Louisa.
Wow. So what am I reading at the moment? It's funny because we all seem to be reading books from other countries, you know, authors from other countries, as in, Teju is from American, Nigerian, but born in America, did you say, Karen? But anyway, so we all seem to have this non sort of English authors sort of read at the moment, because I am reading a book by a Basque author. The book is called Her Mother's Hand by Kamali Jaiho. Or Jaiho in English. It was first published in 2006 in Euskadi, the Basque language. Its title was Amaren Eskuak. I hope I pronounced that correctly. And it won several literary awards when it first came out. And also it's been made into a film. It first presented at the San Sebastian International Film Festival in 2013. So this delightful story, I'm finding it delightful anyway, narrated by Naria, about her relationship with her mother, is well known in Spain and also has been around for a long time in Spain, but new to me and new to perhaps English readers, because it was thanks to English Pen, who have, by the way, a not-for-profit organisation, UK organisation, who has the very cool tagline, freedom to write, freedom to read. They launched around 2013, I think it was, the Pen Translate program, where they provide funding for books like Carmele's to be translated into English and therefore accessible to readers of in English around the world, like me in New Zealand.
And us.
And us, yeah. So, so that's what I'm reading at the moment. So, but about the book, so Nadia, I mean, you know, she's a young professional writer. Well, she's a journalist with a young daughter at home. So she's juggling, you know, she's a contemporary young woman juggling her life with a mother in hospital, a husband, juggling commitments between husband, work and child. So just like anyone else really in the world, but any other young woman in the world at the moment. So I wanted to read this short paragraph to sort of illustrate a life that we all sort of live ourselves in any part of the world, I think, at the moment. She rests her notebook on the hood of the car and writes the address in it. She lifts up one leg to stop her purse from falling to the ground. She can't move a muscle if she doesn't want the telephone, the notebook, the pen and all everything to fall to the ground. How many times has this happened to us as we're running around? Mate is looking at her, thinking her friend looks like a Chinese juggler doing amazing things to keep the plates from falling. Now that's balance, she says, looking at Nadia. That's balance, you know. That is just so typical of our lives as we lead them. But so I'm really enjoying this book, and I hope to read some more of the books translated by Pen English. It's an award that they give out every year. I think they translate about 3 or 4 books from their original language into English for us all to access.
Because you recommended to me a book that I've got, which is the Gabriela Ibarra. She's Basque as well.
Yes, I'm going through a Basque period.
The dinner party,
yes. The dinner guest,
I think Pen is international, but there will certainly be chapters in different countries, because there's a...
Do we have one in New Zealand, do you think?
I think we do. I'm going to say we do. Pen people, make yourself known.
Yes.
Well, I think I must be going through an Indian subcontinent phase in my reading.
It goes like that, doesn't it?
Yeah,
you
it really
in
does.
One. Yeah.
Yeah. So I've just recently managed to get through an absolute masterpiece by Arundhati Roy, The Ministry of Utmost Happiness, the one published in 2017.
Also a Auckland Library's Top 100.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, and this was Roy's first book for 20 years, because she'd won the Booker Prize for The God of Small Things.
First fiction for 20 years, right?
Her first fiction, first novel for 20 years. But as I said, it's an absolute masterpiece. And I'm, to be really honest, I'm not sure that I can even do it justice here today. It's, you know, it's similar in a way to Girls Burn Brighter, in that it describes the sort of abject poverty and despair experienced in some communities in India. And once again, it's that feeling of sensory overload that you get from the writing. There's so much going on with all the sights, the sounds, the tastes, the smells. She tackles really big social issues. And because, as we know, India has such a complex social history, and a lot of it, colonisation has added to the mix. But now she writes about otherness, that state of being other, and I find that really fascinating. So she writes about the people that live between the streams, the main streams, perhaps live in the margins. And so this novel, I don't want to give too much away, but it's about the struggle of a transgender person. It really just blew me away. It's such an intense read. I've got a prediction about it, if you want to hear that. I think... So you heard it here first.
That in a,
two witnesses,
and possibly some listeners out there.
I reckon that in a generation or so, people will look back and say that this was one of the best books ever written. So you heard it here.
Wow.
That's my prediction. It's an absolute experience. So highly recommended.
So it'd be one of those top 100 of the century or something.
Yeah, I was just thinking of the anthologies that did the top 100
it'll be
books
the top of the yes.
Maybe if we're still around, we can do a top 100 of the century at Auckland Library instead of our top 100 of the year.
Yeah, I'd be keen to do that.
Yeah.
But it will be on that list.
But you had also, when we were chatting on our way here, you mentioned another favorite Indian, when we got on this thing of topics of countries, another favorite Indian novel.
So a little bit of a compare and contrast, actually. This one, a lot of people will be familiar with it, by Vika Swarup, called Q&A. Now, this was written a while ago. It's about nearly 15 years ago, I think. And it was made into that really feel-good movie called Slumdog Millionaire. Very similar to the other two books that I've talked about in terms of the landscape, the senses that are just... fully whatever happens when you're
being transmitted.
Overloaded.
Yeah.
The poverty. But this is a rags to riches tale, whereas the other two are really rags to rags, I guess. It's got a slightly lighter touch, although it's very serious undertones. But it's about a young man who wins a game show. I think it's the Who Wants to Be a Millionaire style of things. It's quite an accessible read in a lot of ways because there's a lightness of touch to it and some humour. So it would be a good one to start, I think, if you're wanting to explore this sort of writing. And I think the fact that there's a lightness, I'm sure that's probably why it was made into such a box office hit. Of a movie.
Yeah, so they were able to do that without changing the ending. We talked once about how Hollywood doesn't want to give a hard, unhappy ending to a movie because then people won't tell their friends to go see it.
Yeah.
So that could be... Yeah,
yeah, so they stayed pretty true to the novel.
And they didn't have to... I quite like the fact that... you said of three novels that you read, two were rags to rags, but one was rags to riches. I mean, one out of three, that's pretty helpful.
It's probably not bad, is it?
Mm. I really liked also what you said about the transmitting of the flavor of the place. I think you didn't use the word flavor, but it's what's come to my mind.
I should have used that word.
So following your theme of... how you read one book and then you read another. So Teju Cole actually, together with our show on crime fiction, Allison, because I was walking through the library and I saw this book that I used to always see on the shelf, Lagos Noir. I used to say Lagos Noir, but I learned from the writer I'm about to talk about that actually that shows you're a tourist and that the Nigerians say Lagos. So it was Lagos Noir, which was a collection. Mm-hmm. This is Chris Abani, another Nigerian writer. And I thought, I'm going to get this now. We have talked about noir from all over the world. So pretty amazing collection. He's the editor. The stories didn't actually seem that literally noir to me. There was some magical realism. There were some quite hard case type stories, but they were all shadowy, which was a bit noir, but actually Lagos was the noir component of the book. It was just the city of Lagos. And so it's got the line, he's got the line, in Lagos, it's not about what is available, but about what you can afford. No. How more noir can you get?
Yeah.
So Chris Abani is who I've now read up on. I was so impressed with both that introduction and then the next book that I read was actually imprisoned a number of times in Nigeria, like Ken Saro-Wiwa, for political dissent. And like Ken Saro-Wiwa, he was sentenced to death, spent 6 months on death row. But his friends managed to pay enough bribes to make it possible for him to get out and escape. And he went into exile. He's now an American citizen. And he calls Nigeria, looking back at it, that troubled African nation. And he actually says his mission, he wants to open the Western world's eyes to that troubled African nation. So as part of opening my eyes and my interest in Nigeria, I read a book of his called Song for Night. And this is about a boy soldier in the war, in the Biafran. I think it's the Biafran War, I'm not sure. It's narrated by the boy whose name is My Luck. You know how they've got these wonderful names. So I don't want to give it away because it's punctuated with these terrible discoveries that you make as you go through it. But basically, My Luck is one of a battalion of children who've been trained for clearing mines and landmines, and he's suffered some really horrible atrocities, and he's also committed some horrible crimes. He's been made to commit them, including killing people. And it's, the book is this searingly honest look into the human propensity for violence, and this boy actually enjoys some of the violent things he's made to do. And yet, at the same time, he never stops caring deeply about some people, mostly people who are, I think mostly all people who are innocent is probably what I'd, how I describe them, which of course he is no longer. And the wonderful thing is, so I've got a wonderful thing, and this is my story as well, and this is my second story, which is that I like this book so well that I got another book of his, which is Nollywood. This is a book of photographs about the Nigerian film industry. So I don't know if you guys know that the biggest, third biggest film industry in the world after Hollywood and Bollywood is Nigerian. And it's called Nollywood.
Wow, I did not know that.
Yeah. And Chris Abani has written one of the texts for this book. So the, it's a book of photographs, but there are texts that, to start you out. And Chris Abani has a beautiful, excellent, perceptive, dark, funny piece of writing called Omar Sharif Comes to Nollywood. And it's about seeing Lawrence of Arabia in a projected, you know, film. What do you call it? Projected. In a dusty motor park in the 1970s as a kid, and how everybody fell in love with Omar Sharif. He was the most beautiful African they'd ever seen. And it actually reminded me in a lot of ways of Victor Rogers' play set in Samoa, My Name is Gary Cooper. Oh. I don't know if any of you know that. It was a great play. So here's the wonderful thing. Looking at this book, the next text after Chris Abani's was written by Zina Sarawiwa. This is Ken Saro-Wiwa's daughter. And she was 19 when her father was executed. She was living in England with her mother and brothers and sisters. She was not able to go back to Nigeria for 10 years. And when she did go back, she, like Teju Cole going back, she found this different Lagos, the Lagos of today, the chaotic, corrupt, and yet vibrant Lagos. And she talks about, so here's the part that's so wonderful. She uses the Lagos and Nollywood industries to explain how Africa is being reinvented, because for the first time, it's representing and interpreting Africa, pumping out their own stories and inspiring other African nations to do the same. So she says, Nollywood has allowed Africans to dream in Africa and find release in their own continent. And this is part of what they call the African Renaissance. So this was like such a wonderful, hopeful ending to me that this country, which I'd started out with such a painful relationship, is now standing to me is a symbol of how, you know, things can always change, and nothing is set, and nothing, people make the difference, as we know. So yeah, now I'm looking at my clock and I'm going, we've got 1 minute left. So who wants to throw in a last thought, a last recommendation?
I was just, well, it was more of a thought that there's always hope, isn't there?
Yes. Hope. Yeah. Mm. And I just think that I hope we've transmitted, as you were saying, the books had transmitted their flavor. I hope that we've transmitted a desire for adventure, which you can fill by finding books that are set in other countries and that give you an insight and a flavor and a way of seeing into the lives of others, as you were saying so well, or connecting with your family, as you were saying, Louisa. So, yeah, that's our show for today. Kakite ano.
Haere ra.
Haere ra. Was brought to you by Auckland Libraries. Find us online at aucklandlibraries.govt.nz and catch the program next Sunday at 9:35 p.m. on 104.6 FM. or anytime online at planetaudio.org.nz/booksandbeyond. Every day, every day, every day.